Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boylo, Nazarita Goldhammer with Epis Radio, Radio for the Thinking Person. It's April 4th, 2022. We're on the West Coast, Pacific Time. It's 9 o'clock. Today, we're going to have a final discussion on earth science. We'll come back to it. It's been a wonderful ride for these last couple of months. Next week, we're going to start a series of shows on climate change, global warming. We will take into account the science. We will discuss the science, but we're also going to discuss the sociality of it, the philosophy, the interrelational elements, the psychology, what it means for human beings. Because believe it or not, it does tie into all the work in psychoanalysis that we've ever done, all the work about the self, morality, responsibility, and most of all, nonviolence. We're going to see an unprecedented amount of structural upheaval in the world. It's coming. It's here. It's going to get worse. And people better wake up. We have work to do. So today we thought we would talk about upcycling. It's an exciting topic. I'm really just myself learning. And I'll tell you my naive view, my naive definition, which is that it has something to do with life cycles. It has something to do with the cycle of something, right? Of could be a consumer good, consumer item. It could be furniture. It could be food. Could be anything that we use, like cell phone, computer, an automobile. You know, I gave away an old Ford Lincoln car, a huge car, years ago in Montana. I have no idea where it's at right now. And I think if I were to do it over again, either I wouldn't have given it away or I would have been a lot more aware about where it was going. I'd hate to know that it would be on a lot somewhere out in the middle of a field. That's not right. So we have this, you know, even in relations, erotic relations, we have an idea of linearity in the West, which is different from the East. If you start thinking about Tantra, and even cycles within one's own self. And I know as a former athlete that we had a linear philosophy to some extent, but to some other extent it was cyclical. So part of the linearity in America has been based upon, you know, collecting things, relationships, ideas, and goods, houses, vehicles, the things that we use. And there's always seems to be in America this great endpoint. And the endpoint is we throw them out, we dump them, we don't know where they're going. Well, we've been surprised because a lot of our goods, we're learning, end up in super poor communities in the United States or abroad. In third world countries, they go somewhere. Maybe they go to a dump, and we're seeing more and more evidence, and it's related to climate change. We're seeing more and more evidence of these dumping grounds where unbelievable amounts of anything that's human produced could be cow manure, could be runoff from a slaughterhouse, could be electronics. It could be just your basic garbage. And so that we put them out into a place called the dump, or the landfill. And so something that I'm super interested in, I know that Nazarita is, I want to just make, let's see if I can find something. So part of what comes from this is this linearity in life philosophy is a lack of the following elements. Coexistence. Coexistence within healthy ecosystems, sustainable ecosystems. We don't have that right now. We're tearing down rainforests. We're depleting so many different resources, fossil fuels, and just using up wood products and animal products. Interdependence. So remember, we're talking about upcycling. So underneath that is layered these elements, interdependence, spirituality, responsibility and morality, rights, looking at the long term rather than the short term, learning more about how energy does flow, how it flows between people, how it flows between humans and animals, how it flows with water. And all of this, I think, bears itself out in design. I think design is going to be the biggest industry on the whole earth within 50 years. It may be sooner. And we're on that way right now. It means to completely go back to the zero point, square one, and think about design. How are we designing every single thing about our existence? And we can take from the past what's good and get rid of the rest. But it's deeper for me, and this is just the way I think. It's deeper. It goes very much. It can be informed by and talked about in terms of the East, the Eastern philosophies, and the Western philosophies. What does it mean to be a human being? What is the meaning of humanity? What is it that we're here? And what is it that we're here probably for a short time? You look at the history of the Earth and the fact that there are natural cycles to all life forms and all species. Some live longer, some live shorter, but there's a life cycle. Like I have a life cycle. So I want to be honest about my life cycle. Maybe I'll live 105 years. Maybe I'll live 107 years at best. But that will be my life cycle. And, you know, we teach those things in psychology. We teach those things in all kinds of disciplines, so that people understand where they are in their life cycle. I'm not 20 anymore. But it's the same principle with goods and services. What is the life cycle of a business that you started? Businesses were never meant to be forever. Or the goods that you have. It could be simply going to the store and buying a lot of produce and eating it. Where does that go? This is what we're talking about here, the life cycle of an apartment building, the life cycle of people in a house. You live in a house and there's a grove of trees and there's grasses. Who else lives there with you? What is the life cycle of a city? What's the life cycle of a waterway? And so upcycling, the concept of upcycling asks us to think about circularity and being in a process as opposed to being inert human beings dictating and running the show. Now, let's talk, Nazarita. Let's build a conversation here. What are your first impressions of upcycling? What does this make you think of?
So I often think my first thought as a consumer is that oftentimes when we're tired of something, we throw it away. we throw it away, we don't reuse it or find someone who can reuse it or change its appearance or figure out how to actually redo something, what we do is we forget because we're so disconnected to where, how they come to us and where they go. So we're kind of at the pinnacle of consumerism where we don't know how things are made and who makes them and where they come from. And after we're done, we don't know where they go. So to know both of those cycles means the classic upcycling. Like where do those go? How do we get them? And we've talked a lot about, you know, things like, you know, what happens to clothing, what happens to garbage. A big one is what happens to death. I mean, the greatest upcycling that we can think of in humanity is we're born, and then when we die, are we sealed off into a steel coffin that is hidden in the earth, of which nothing can trespass the contents. And pretty soon, the earth underneath its surface is filled with dead bodies that can't regenerate the earth. It can't use those nutrients because they're locked up in a box, you know, a steel box that nothing can get in. And so, you know, other cultures have this way of upcycling, of recycling, even recycling ourselves. I mean, nothing should go to waste in nature. I'm reminded this whole vision of cleaning the forest. There's this big thing going on. It's been going on for years of where there's the argument that we have to keep clean our forest so that we don't get wildfires, which is absolutely not true because that isn't really the purpose. That isn't the purpose of wildfires. Wildfires are meant to clean up, to release oxygen and to, you know, regenerate the earth, which is what we were talking about, regeneration. But when you look at it, if we keep a clean forest meaning humans control that, pick up dead logs, dead wood, leaves. And so what we're doing is we end up stopping the cycle, stopping the upcycle and creative cycle of nature. Because birds nest in old trees, woodpeckers, they use dead trees in order to build their nest. So if we take all the dead trees away, then what we're doing is we're denying other creatures that we're connected with a home and the way to raise their young. And I think that's one of the things that I really think about. Like, humans are so afraid of consequences, and we ignore where things come from, but we're afraid of consequences of really interacting with nature. And the purpose of upcycling and recycling is to become aware that everything in its life cycle has a meaning. And are we going to be open to that meaning, or are we going to keep ourselves sheltered from the consequences of owning things, of using things, of denying nature its way of regeneration? So that's what, you know, it has so many ramifications of what we're talking about. And because the earth is the major upcycle, recycle system. It is everything has this cycle, but we have alienated ourselves from that cycle. And hence, we're really destroying the earth and destroying other species because of that.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to our book on Vivantonomy, in other words, a non-humanist way of being in the world. There's still many people like this who just, they're rapacious. There are rapacious people on the planet who want to continue to take and take and take. They want to build big houses. They want to have big yards. They want to put pesticide and herbicide on their yards. They are proud of their big houses. And it strikes me that that is a really backward, ignorant view. They were caught into some kind of first world ideology that somehow having a big house was something like a right, right? if you worked hard enough and you were smart and you collected and saved your money, that you could have a big custom-built house and that you deserved that. And that meant that you were successful, and that meant that you were a winner. And there was a kind of a transcendental positivity about that. And we're doing it everywhere. So the rich in this country continue to buy more and more items, more vehicles, larger houses, more houses, more food products. They continue to buy new clothes every quarter, which is a disaster. We need to stop creating new clothes. We need to cut down. We need to decrease this by 99%. There's massive industrial pollution that goes into making clothes. Not 100%, because there are some new clothing manufacturers that have seen the light, but by and large. And so we have this ideology in the United States and in other first world countries, industrialized countries, that it's somehow good that to have bigger and more and to spend money on custom wood floors, continue to take from the forest. And so, and anything in a house. And so what I'm opening my eyes to is that every single thing in a house, in a condo, in an apartment, in a cooperative, comes from somewhere. It doesn't just come from the Easter Bunny, and it doesn't come from a stork. And it's not that the man on the moon is sending it here. Everything we do comes from somewhere. So if you, and this is one of the things that I'm also, I've had a chance to really think about this. The whole idea of cutting down on something or cutting down on meat usage or dairy usage, I think it's a fallacy. I think it's a fantasy. And I wish that the people who have the bigger voices would stop doing that. Stop telling people, like the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're one. They're not the only one, and I think those guys are great. But there's a style of thinking in this country where authoritative voices will suggest that people cut down on something that's inherently evil and bad. So people won't eat meat on Mondays, for example. We shouldn't be eating meat on any day, ever. It should be off the table. And the same with cheese and yogurt and milk. They're bad. They're evil. There's nothing good about them at all. There were industries who duped us into believing that they were good for us. They wouldn't hurt anything or anybody, but it was all false. It was marketing only. The same with Virginia Tobacco. The Virginia Tobacco families, and there were just a few of them, hired lying, deceptive, unscrupulous, immoral directorships. These people went up in front of Congress and lied through their teeth that smoking tobacco was not harmful. But it is. So we have to get real. The whole idea of being I don't know what they call it, a near vegan or an almost vegan. They call them flexible vegans. That's what it is. That's just another nihilist word for liar. Liar. Deceiver. The fact of the matter is we need to learn where everything goes. And when you're done with something, you need to figure out where it's going. Now, Nazarita, we've talked about this in the area of water. Because of global warming, we're going to see water scarcity at even bigger levels. Groundwater is drying up, right? That means there's more use from the aquifers. So we're going to see less usable water. That's one thing. Number two, we're going to see huge water quality concerns. And part of it is because of the first issue. If you can't get 100% pure water, you'll go drink 95% water. You see the point? So if people want to take one issue about upcycling, just one issue, and there are many, but this is one, think about where your water comes from, think about how you use it, and think about where it goes. It is going to be a major problem. It's already a problem across the world, but it's now going to become a problem in the United States. So the principle of upcycling says, let's think about where we're getting our water. Let's think about what we want to use it for. Let's think about how much we're using it. And these are, this is a massive issue. If I buy groceries, the next time, and I have had a blast going to stores. Absolutely a wonderful time because I shop differently now. I'm not swayed by any fancy packaging at all, ever, ever. I disregard it. I broke through. And I spend 99% of my grocery time, I time myself, I spend 99% of my time in a grocery store in the produce section. That's it. That's where I want to get most of my food. And I only buy organic. If there's something that's not organic, I don't buy it. I will not put pesticides and herbicides and who knows what else into my body, ever. So this is part of the upcycling, is to know where things come from and to know where things go. What do you think, Nazarita?
Well, it's pretty fixated in the beginning on clothes because, you know, there's all these ads and marketing for the ideal closet, and anybody who in the last 10 years has watched Sex and the City or, you know, Homes on TV, they have whole rooms dedicated to these closets that are just meant to make you have a really neat, clean house. But, you know, doing some research, it's like we own so many things that sometimes, especially women, we tend to own a lot of shoes, a lot of purses, a lot of fancy clothes, a lot of casual clothes. Now it's athletic wear. And so all these things mean that we need more room to store them. And so I did a little research on, you know, how far we have come in terms of clothes and how it relates to upcycling. Like there's a movement now, a minimalist movement that says, go through your closet, wear everything that you have. If you don't wear it, then you have to recycle it. You have to upcycle it. You have to find ways that that it can be used. Like a lot of old clothing can be made into quilts, and which centuries ago, that's what they did. They took clothes that could no longer be worn, and they made them into quilts. And, you know, when I was in Denver, I became obsessed with something called a wardrobe. And wardrobes were used, you know, what is it, 100 years ago, less than even 100 years ago, and they were these beautiful wood closets that were like 36 inches wide to 42 inches wide, and then they were just deep enough to hold a hanger, and they were done in these beautiful woods and veneer woods and carvings, and that's where you kept all of your clothes, not just some clothes. It's where you kept all of them. And I was fascinated because of the beauty of these cupboards, these wardrobes. So here's a little history on that. Because the struggle is always that we want to use what we have. If we don't use what we have, we're buying too much. And so wardrobes, you know, they didn't have wardrobes until like the 11th, 12th century. I just did some little bit of research, and how they came about is everybody just folded their clothes. and they had very few clothes. Like they had a good and a dress, and they had to hand make the clothes. So again, the invention of sewing machines and the way to make things to make it faster and easier means that we now have an overabundance of clothes from cheap labor, from warehousing, from cheap materials that don't last, instead of making our clothes and having each thing like a piece of art, something that lasts and can be recycled. But, you know, wardrobe, how it came about was the kings needed a place to keep their robes so they wouldn't wrinkle. Like the normal people just kept those few things that they had folded, which they could pick up and leave at a moment's notice. And then what happened was it used to be called a garden robe, which means to guard one's robes, which again, you're looking at the materialistic use of language, like how we have been indoctrinated and use a language that is violent in terms of consumerism. So one of the old ways how they used to do woodworking was there's a part here where it says, it used to be called that hanging clothes were hung in a toilet shaft. And we know what old toilets look like, right? They're big boxes with lots of aroma. And because what they discovered was the ammonia from urine kills fleas. So those were like the first places that clothing was hung. And so when you look at this and then you start to look in your own closet, which is something that everybody is, I think, thinking about today, how to minimize what we do, how to minimize what we have, to live the life that we can, to look good, to have in mind what other people are going through who are poverty that don't have anything. And there's always this equation, if you have too much, someone else is not having enough. There's that equation. So I just thought that was really interesting because it deals with forest too. How big of a house can we have? Like, why are we continuing to rape the forest and cut them down so that, one, we can eat meat because it's overconsumption of a product, and, one, we're using the wood to keep building bigger and bigger, 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 bigger houses, which are just small rooms that we can't even be in all at once. And so this is the rethinking of upcycling. Like, how do we upcycle what we have? Like, if you live in a house that has extra rooms, what are you going to use those rooms for? Like, we don't need all the rooms that we have. We don't need all the storage that we have. And so we have to always think of that. I pass by garages every day as I walk out of a complex where I live, and some of the garages are open, and they are stuffed to the brim with stuff. And sometimes
stuff
I see
to the
people
brim
out
of stuff.
There trying. Yes, I mean,
stuff
have you
to the
seen
brim
that
with stuff.
Where the look on people's faces when they're there, they're like, you can see they're agonized. It's like, what do I do? How do I begin? How do I get rid of stuff? Where do I put it? Why is it a mess? All these things prohibit us from creative thinking.
Absolutely, because if you don't, I mean, if you have too much stuff, of course, then you're just, you're going to be dealing with stuff. Now, in my own life, I really like a very simple external environment. It doesn't have to be Spartan, and it doesn't have to be stark, but it has to be rational. It has to be intelligent. Everything has to have a function. Now, of course, there can be room to blend out of that strictness, of course. But I want to go back to this issue, the two issues of clothes and houses. And here's what I believe. I believe the average random working class or professional or upper middle class person, man or woman, could throw out, and I don't mean throw into a garbage, but get rid of 90 to 95% of their clothing. and be okay. And in fact, enjoy it better and more. And this goes along with exactly what you're seeing. If you pare it down to what you really need, if you really think about the clothing that you do need, and I think there, I'm going to go so far as a psychoanalyst to say there's clothing anxiety. I think that people have anxiety. They don't want to get rid of something because they have anxiety that they might want it in the future. They buy more clothes because they have anxiety that they might not have the latest fashion. They have clothes in part to make sure there's an appropriate piece of clothing for every single possible occasion. And then we end up with just closets and closets full of clothes, clothes that we've maybe never worn. And I've had to be really honest with myself about that. I go through my closet. I'm almost at time for another purge. I have a few pieces of clothing now, not very many left, but that I've never worn or I've only worn a few times. Well, I'm gonna give them to somebody. I'm not sure as heck not going to sell them. I'm going to give them. But the same thing goes with housing. There's this weird ideology in America that if you have more money, you should be able to buy the bigger houses and more houses. And there are people in this country that own 10 houses. They have a house in New York, a house in L.A., a house in Miami, a house in Hawaii. And they talk to people, and they're proud of it. They speak with beaming pride, shoulders back, nose up in the air. Or they actually talk about the square footage of their house when talking with other bourgeoisie individuals. Yes, my husband and I, we have a 7,000-square-foot home that we've just custom built. Or a 10,000-square-foot home, or whatever it is. Who cares? But I'll tell you right now, it's too much. I personally believe that the average random person needs maybe somewhere between 600 and 1,200 square feet at most. And so if there are two people, multiply that times 150%, 1.5. So that would be 900 to 1,800. And that's of course, a wide average. But, and I think you're right, Nazarene, I don't think we need all the rooms that we need. If you are a person living on your own, I think that a one-bedroom place, perhaps two bedrooms, is more than enough. We have garages to house our gas guzzlers. And so you just see, if you start looking at the design of neighborhoods and houses, what we wear, you see this huge consumer pattern. I had a friend many years ago, and I'll always remember this conversation. He was an immigrant, second generation immigrant, and I'm maybe a sixth generation immigrant. And I was telling him about a used I didn't say used, but I was telling him about a Mercedes that I'd had when I was younger, and it was used and it was beautiful, it was pristine, and I took really good care of it. And this was during the time when I was ignorant about the use of gasoline. I'm not now. But the first thing out of his mouth was it new? And there was a condescension. He had a lot of money. There was a condescension. That is that if you didn't have a new house or a new car or a new dress, that there was something wrong with you. And I greatly value reusing. I have a pair of jeans that I've had for, probably 6 years. And I take very good care of them. And I know that when I'll get a rip or a tear, and I'm going to patch it. It'll be well done, and it'll look beautiful. And I'm going to keep those jeans. I'm bound and determined to keep those jeans forever. I'm not going to give them away. I'm going to keep them. because they fit me great, they look great, and they're my jeans. They mean something to me. So this is the point. People are all too willing to go buy. So those are three places, Nazarita. Maybe you could comment on that again. Housing. How do we think about housing and living, let alone buying, which is another issue. Clothing and then the kitchen. How do we buy for the kitchen? So maybe you could comment on that. Because we're talking about upcycling, right? We're talking about reusing. I want to just read a quote from Hildegard of Bingen. She states, this is 12th century. This is Hildegard the philosopher, who was also a naturalist. Glance at the sun. See the moon and the stars. Gaze at the beauty of Earth's greenings. Now, think beautiful. It is a call to contemplation, but it's also a call to action, to look at what we have, to look at the beauty of our ecosystems and not destroy any particular being in that ecosystem, and not to take too much. The middle way, or the philosophy of modesty, humbleness, right movement, justice. You start thinking about both philosophies of the East and the West. And there's always been a group of thinkers who've been very aware of right action. And right action means be aware of what you do, be aware of what you eat, be aware of what you use, be aware of what you take, and only use what you need. And to contemplate what the word need means. Now, if you take classes in sociology, they will teach you in first year sociology the difference between a need and a desire, a need and a preference. Advertising community has totally manipulated the American mind. They've turned, they've made us believe that our preferences and our desires are needs. And that's part of the reason why we're in this mess. We've been duped. We've allowed ourselves to be duped. We participate in being duped. But there's a lot of things that I like and that I desire, but I don't really need them. And in fact, what I've learned is that one has to be really careful with desire and the idea of preference, right? Well, I might go to the grocery store and I might see a goodie, as it were. And I know that the way that the experience of the goodie is that it's short-lived. But the experience of the need is long-lived. And that's part of upcycling. What do you think, Nazarita, going back to the house, the clothing, food for the kitchen, and the difference between need and desire or preference?
This is really interesting. So needs and desires, so needs and wants, like marketing is now, we are marketed to every single day. Little shopping centers were never a thing in the past, and either were big stores where they had multiple square footage of different kinds of food. It used to be very simple. I think that what's gone on is we've replaced our interconnectedness with nature and our creativity and inspiration with consumerism, because consumerism kind of enables us to put a lid on our creativity, because the creation, the innovation comes from seeing something that we kind of take. But I thought of this even deeper than that. I thought, what do we do to ourselves? How do we how do we upcycle ourselves? So I know that sometimes the most violent person can become the best advocate for peace and the one who mediates and understands the other mindset, that it can be used for good. And yet I see in our culture a lot that we want to leave the negative in ourselves. There's so many self-help books, you know, get rid of this, get rid of that. But instead, I think we should look at some of our ways of being and just say, how do we change that? How do we utilize our curiosity, or how do we utilize our consumerism by saying, I really like all these things, and pull it back and say, that desire for beauty and new can be used for innovation, creativity to help save the earth and other species. So, you know, everything that we have to think of how do we upcycle ourselves? How do we upcycle our thinking? How do we upcycle, you know, the way that we look and what we buy and how we live and how we eat? And there's a lot of literature out nowadays saying ADHD is connected to hoarding. And that's because there's so much energy that is underutilized. It's like a fascination with the world, but there isn't anywhere for it to go but to acquire and to have things around. Sure. Because the pathway is blocked.
Brad, let me respond to that just real quickly, not to interrupt, but one of the things that I've seen as an educator is that there has been a motivation and a push in American education to teach skills, whether they're technical skills or even just math and science. Teaching people how to do math and teaching people how to write and teaching people how to write code for software is not enough. So we do a lot of skills-based teaching in this country, but people don't understand how to hook it all up. They don't understand the deeper meaning. We don't teach understanding. We don't teach morality. We don't teach how everything works together. To me, a huge part of this, when you talk about upcycling yourself, what I hear from my point of view in the world is what a great opportunity to start thinking about who I am, what my values are, what's important to me, how I can participate in the whole, how I can contribute, you know, what's my role in giving, not my role in taking. It's an inverse philosophy. And so we have that in this country. It's a taking philosophy. And I think we've hit it. I really do. Because before, if you look at linear cycling, we end up with a graveyard and waste. But upcycling is very different. It's about regenerating your very self. Now, we are just out of time in about a minute. Nazarita, please take us to a close, and then we'll stop. We just have about a minute left.
I think that you said it all. I'd like you to offer something, because I think we have hit it. It's just the upcycling and recycling of the self. How do we look at ways that we've been? How do we go forward? How do we utilize things that we consider no longer needed? But you know, the best reformed, the best person to stop smoking is a reformed smoker. I'll leave it at that.
Well, let me take this. Thank you very much. I just want to say a couple of final things. We are going to move into probably a whole spring and summer of shows about global warming, climate change, because they relate to earth science. We've been talking about earth science. Let's look at a manifestation of how humans are and how we can use the concept of upcycling to tackle and think about global warming. I want to thank EPIS, Psychoanalytic Institute, who constantly supports what we're doing here on the radio show. Some of our listeners buy our books. Go to Radio Conversations, Radio Conversations on Amazon. Put in my name, Radio Conversations, Kevin Boyle. Buy our books. It helps keep us on the air. Have a good week, and we'll be back next Monday.